Time for Vanessa and Gallant.
That sounds good. I'll have that.
Featuring Vanessa Richardson.
This is not a common opinion. This is not a popular opinion.
And Paul Gallant.
Tom Brady is my Lord and Savior.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
All right, we're rolling along on a Wednesday talking about some weird things involving Manti Te'o and all of the reviews that we'll have
for you.
Yeah,
you watched the Netflix talk. You were blown away.
Here's the thing. It's two parts, and part one is mostly a recap. Like, if you paid attention 10 years ago, there's really nothing in part one that's insane other than the, per spoiler alert, that the man who catfished Manti now identifies as a woman.
Okay.
And then, so that's really the only shocking part of the first part. And then the second part is where it gets weird. Like, you hear the voices that this person used to do to trick Manti Te'o.
Oh, so they did talk on the phone?
Yes.
I thought for some reason that the communications were all text, emails, instant messenger.
No, there were voice memos sent. And I forgot that this happened. Dr. Phil interviewed the, at the time, man who had catfished Manti Te'o. And Dr. Phil had said, I've talked to FBI experts. There's no way this is your voice. Well, then the guy went in the room and, like, recorded the voice because he said, in order to get into character, I have to be in, like, a dark room, blah, blah, blah. Went in a dark room, did the voice, and sure enough, it was this guy fooling Manti Te'o. There's just details
hey,
that come
Manti!
Out.
Don't you want some of this?
It sounded like a chick, though.
It did.
But he had also, like, they interview one of the head honchos at the university about how they, like, didn't know how to handle it because it happened right before the national championship game and how it affected his. I mean, this fake chick affected his NFL draft. It's crazy.
That zone blitz. Oh, my God. It was so odd.
Something tells me that you'd be a little less convincing.
What? You don't think that someone would buy that? That's a lady's voice?
I'm sure some people would like it. I'm just saying some people wouldn't buy it.
Imagine a phone sex line with with me on the other end. Oh, yeah. You're really getting me. I sound like the gingerbread man from Shrek.
It is Weird Wednesday on Vanessa and Gallant. And it was very weird last night. What we thought would be kind of an epic pitching duel. The Astros lose 4-3. JV versus Cease. From Chandler Rome, I was reading this before we came on air to Sean. Not since John Tudor outdueled Dwight Gooden on September 11th, 1985, had a game featured two qualified starting pitchers with sub-2 ERAs after at least 20 starts. A very specific stat. Either way, two great pitchers. Kind of all fell apart in the seventh inning. We had a little beef between Maldi and JV.
Yeah.
And then two runs that followed.
Yeah.
What is happening?
What is going on? I'll tell you what's going on. Christian Vasquez isn't getting enough at-bats. But on a serious note, not Verlander's A game. It's two starts in a row where it hasn't been his A game. But, I mean, the Astros did what they were supposed to. They got runs early. They chased Cease from the game. They just couldn't add any more runs. And there you go.
Level of concern after this. They dropped two to the White Sox.
Well, here's the problem. And I don't want to do this.
Oh, no.
I mean, it is only August 17th, and the Astros do have the best record in the American League.
Do we have a superhero among us?
He's not a liked superhero.
Oh.
Is
he a villain?
Can we call this superhero upon us? Sean Maple. It is I, Panic Man! And I am panicking about the Houston Astros in first place of the American League. Justin Verlander, two starts in a row where, like, you're wondering, okay, is he going to make it all the way to the end of the season? You also have Yordan Alvarez's wrist. What's going on? What is happening? I'll tell you what's happening. It's not ideal. Oh, no. Alenmis Diaz. He got hurt again. He's got an injured groin. What's going on?
Trey Mancini,
not in the lineup.
Dusty Baker lineup.
Christian Vasquez, not in the lineup. Panic button. Panic in the streets for the first place team in the American League.
The White Sox, as Paul alluded to, did take the lead. And this is what it sounded like when that happened.
I don't want to hear it.
I know. PTSD.
I don't want to hear it.
1-0. Moncada in the air. Center field again. He's done it again. The Sox have taken the lead. One pitch later tonight. That guy's amped. Everybody here standing. And the Sox have the lead again in the eighth. against the Astros.
I lashed out irrationally.
It literally had this. It was the same thing that happened as the day before.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, look, I mean, the Astros beat the White Sox in the playoffs last year. The White Sox are one of the biggest disappointments in baseball this season. They were the fifth favorite to win the World Series going into the year per Vegas, and here they are where they're barely above 500. They are about a 50-50 proposition to actually even make it into the playoffs. And I found myself after the game, Vanessa, just being like, why are these people so happy? Why are you so excited about your regular season
win?
It
was a fun game. I will say this. Like, people were on their feet. People were into it. It didn't feel like a Tuesday baseball game.
Am I a jerk, Vanessa, for being mad that they were into it? It's like, no.
Well, the answer is yes, but I don't think, like, in general, I don't think it's bad to be mad at the other team.
I wanted them to be quiet. I wanted those fans to be quiet. You lost in the playoffs. This game does not matter. Shut your little Southside mouths.
The best team in baseball, you're going to be excited.
It's their World Series, so raise a banner, Chicago. Congratulations.
Not excited was Justin Verlander after the game. This is what JV sounded like after the Stros lost.
A little frustrated, obviously. But, I mean, gosh, it was a tough day all around. I mean, seemed like every time they put the ball in play, you know, weekly, it was a hit, and if they hit a couple hard, it were outs. It's like, I mean, whatever.
I love the end of that.
We didn't really get answers on what happened between he and Maldi, but that frustrating moment, I have not seen that between them before. Maybe I'm wrong.
But look, Martin Maldonado is the greatest defensive catcher of all time. I mean, he's like Bill Belichick with the New York Giants, you know, going up against those Buffalo Bills and Thurman Thomas, going up against Joe Montana. The greatest defensive mind of all time. Yeah, he's batting 180, but, you know, when you're a genius like Maldi and Justin Verlander has some issues with you, I mean, Justin Verlander, you better shut up. What have you ever done other than the MVP and the World
Apparently
Series?
Apparently we're still in a sarcastic panic mode.
I got to say this about the Maldonado experience.
Sure.
Like, I think that's an easy moment, Vanessa, to look at and overreact to or just to have some fun with. But, I mean, this idea that he is someone that can never be removed from the lineup is a weird one that Dusty is married to. And far be it from me, the non-baseball guy, to just wonder why that is. But Vasquez is a better hitter. And a moment like last night, I just wonder, okay, like, can you really tell me that Maldonado has so much value as a defensive catcher that's calling strikes for the pitcher that you can sort of just overlook the fact that he's not a good bat?
These guys also aren't going to stay around as free agents if they're not playing. So
that's
thing that I think of as well. Yordan is still in the slump. That's concerning. Obviously, we know Brantley is out for the year. Diaz last night left the game after injuring his groin. This is what Dusty Baker had to say about Diaz.
Well, he's not good right now. You know, and we're trying to space him the best we could. You know, that's why I gave him 2 days off before. But on that line drive, you know, that he, you know, kind of turned around a little bit. I guess that's when it's a left groin discomfort. So he's probably not available for the rest of his road trip. So we may have to, you know, get another body here.
Another body, and we'll see who that next body is. This is something that I do think is worth monitoring because, once again, you're losing out on depth. How much depth do you have as the Astros when your super utility guy, who does get banged up a lot, gets banged up again? Throw that on top of the Michael Brantley injury. Throw that on top of, I don't know, whatever's going on with Yordan Alvarez. I'm not speculating that he's hurt, but he hasn't been hitting
time,
well.
But at the same time, he had to go on the IL, what, twice for right hand inflammation?
Yep.
Maybe not twice, but at least one time he...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like two stints of him not playing due to right hand inflammation. I think there's cause for concern. Yeah. And it, of course, happened after the All-Star break.
And I would say my, and I would imagine yours too. I mean, we have last year flashbacks to Alex Bregman, who was doing pretty well for the first half of the season. And then as time went on and all of a sudden that wrist injury took place, it was a real slump that lasted into the postseason and resulted in a surgery in early November. So, yeah, I can't help but think about Alex Bregman when I'm watching Alvarez right now. Hopefully it's just a slump. I mean, it could be just a slump, but it's quite the slump. And it's, I mean, taking him entirely out of the MVP conversation.
Yeah, which is sad. Also, yeah. I'm going to say, like, the most obvious thing that's ever been said in sports. Ooh. When you're a month and a half away from baseball that really matters, or if you think about it, really a month once you get into September and October, the healthiest team sometimes is going to be the one that wins. The Astros, to me, there's no question they're the best team in baseball. I will hear arguments on the Dodgers. Of course, the Yankees have had a terrible month. They had a terrible month of July, and they've been in a huge slump. I think they've lost 11 out of the last 13. it's been terrible for them. I still think the Astros are the best team in baseball. But look, last year, like, if they have Lance McCullers Jr. or Justin Verlander, do they win the World Series? I think so. And so, we'll
you feel
see
better
what
about
happens.
It. That's for sure.
I think they win, no question, against the Braves. But yeah, well, the Astros still have two games against the White Sox coming up, so they can still tie the series. Overall, not worried about the Astros, but nice like last night, especially with JV on the mound, disappointing for sure.
Yep, 100%. And we'll see next start for Verlander. That is something to keep an eye on as well. Like he is back from Tommy John surgery, and I think it's totally fair to wonder, okay, like how do you manage him best so that he's pitching at his best come postseason? I wonder what, you know, maybe it's been happening the last couple of nights, but there we go.
All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, could there be a Deshaun Watson settlement coming soon, per the league's top reporters, plus how the MLB new playoff schedule could affect the Astros. That's next.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. You're listening to Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
League sources are telling Aaron Wilson, among others, that they are conducting, that the NFL and NFLPA are conducting active settlement negotiations in the Deshaun Watson disciplinary matter. Whether compromise will be reached before designee Peter C. Harvey rules on the appeal remains unclear, with some optimism expressed by sources. Guys, this would certainly match kind of our theory that maybe that Deshaun apology with Aditi Kinkabwala before the preseason game was to warm up the NFL so that they could reach a settlement of, I don't know, 8 games.
I really hope it didn't warm the NFL up, though. I mean,
one would hope, but what have we seen the NFL do before?
I agree, but if apologizing now gets you out of trouble, what is the NFL if not a very lenient parent, right? Like, I know that earlier today, wasn't Lance Erline doing Eric Cartman voices?
It was Eric Cartman type voice. I don't know if it was supposed to be Eric Cartman, but the voice he did reminded me of Eric Cartman.
If you've watched South Park, you'd know that Eric Cartman basically like runs all over his mom until maybe some recent seasons. And if Deshaun Watson is able to go up to Roger Goodell and say, "I have such a lovely mother, such a pretty mother," and all of a sudden he's facing an 8-game suspension, I will be very disappointed. I wonder if the NFL came into it, and we're speculating here as far as the actual negotiation process, and said, hey, 2 years. And then that's where the negotiation actually began. And maybe they meet halfway.
So Deshaun's camp wanted no games, just to be clear.
Yeah.
So you think the NFL went with 2 years, and they were like, meet in the middle.
That would make sense.
Diamond Rio said, yeah.
Especially if they're saying no games, and I don't know, I have a hard time finding a way that Deshaun Watson can levy that into a, I don't know, 7-game suspension. I mean, even on fictional television with Better Call Saul, where Saul Goodman's negotiating his way.
I need
from
to see that show. You
hundreds
love that
of years
show.
In jail. Oh yeah, just final episode was on Monday night.
We had heard that the NFL had offered 8 games, or was it 8 or 12 at one point? There were conflicting reports that they had offered 8. Some had offered, said they offered 12. We know that Deshaun's 12. Camp said that they wouldn't fight with 6.
Mm-hmm. It was because...
But the NFL fought with 6.
They, I think, are very big into this idea that Watson is not playing a game in Houston. And I feel like they think it'll be a bad look for the league if he comes and there's vitriol in the stands, and if the broadcast is going to talk about it for the entire game and then there's an entire week of buildup, you're going to have to make Deshaun Watson available. What, you don't think that some intrepid reporters from right here in Houston aren't going to fly up
well,
to
it's local
be at every
and
press
national.
Conference?
I mean, yeah. You're going to have every while it's not, and it's not just sports. Here's the thing. This is a news story, too. Like, this is a major news story.
Ooh,
so it's not just like it's... You know, it's like going to be like the Wall Street Journal and people from NBC that are going to come out. How are women reacting to Deshaun Watson, you know, returning to Houston?
Is jet-setting reporter Sports Vanessa going to head up to Cleveland?
I would would I go to Cleveland?
Yeah.
Well, they don't play in Cleveland.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, they play here.
I would mean for the media availabilities in the week that are leading up to the actual game itself.
You know what? I do have a good friend that lives in Cleveland. I think she works for the ABC affiliate. So you know what? I may do my favorite type of trip, which is kind of a half work, half play trip. Yeah, pop at a few press conferences.
Ooh, play in Cleveland.
Mm-hmm. Whoa.
Where? There,
did you hear about, we talked about this on air, I think, the massage therapy
convention
that was in Cleveland. Incredibly awkward.
I mean, maybe that's where reporter Vanessa needs to go. Yeah. So, hey, how do you feel about being in the same city as this guy?
Poor Michael Phelps, who's the keynote speaker there. Michael Phelps, how many massage therapists did you have in your career?
Like, actually, I want to answer questions about the weed that I got in trouble for that one time.
The massage convention is next weekend.
What'd you say?
It's next weekend.
Okay, so they're almost out. They're almost out.
So get those tickets fast.
There's no game.
Here's the thing. I'll never get over the fact that one of the stipulations with Deshaun was like Sue L. Robinson suggesting that he not be allowed to get outside massages. Do you think that's going to make him want to get outside massages more?
Wanting what you can't have?
Correct.
Getting fruit. That's what gets him off, apparently.
Right. That's the whole point. I don't know.
Yeah, that's... someone who wants what he can't have all the time, yes.
Well, but not to like, the extent, not like just Deshaun, to be clear to our all right? listeners.
Let me help you out
not
here.
Not to the not extent.
Like we're not trying to lump you in with Deshaun.
I don't know, though. I mean, it felt like it was just a reflection. I saw myself in the mirror, minus the massages. Just the
okay,
wanting
but
what I can't have.
This thing has to be done before week one, right? I mean, it's like...
You would think.
We're in the middle of the preseason, unless Deshaun's team decides to sue or whatever and take it to federal court.
But they also said that they would have it done before training camp, that Sue L. Robbins would have it done before training camp. And it took, what, until like August 5th or something? So all these deadlines are like kind of meaningless. I would assume week one, just because you don't want them playing week one, maybe week two, and then getting suspended for 12 games. Like, even from the Browns, I'm like, I do not want that. I want to know.
You didn't want him playing in the preseason in Jacksonville with a bunch of Florida men. A bunch of Florida men in jorts in a pool that are saying, like, essentially calling Watson a pervert. That you didn't want. Then he played poorly. Like, there's no way that you should have him playing. Just keep him off the field if you don't want to look bad. I really wonder what's taking so long, too.
Yeah, especially when all of the reports were like, oh, this is getting done fast because everybody wants... Remember, they said that Roger Goodell wasn't going to be the ruler because it needed to be, quote-unquote, expedited. So I do wonder what's going on there, and I wonder when we'll have a decision on that. A decision has been made with MLB playoff dates because the first week of the regular season was postponed due to the lockout. Mm-hmm. Each team had 3 makeup games added to the end of their schedule. The regular season will now end Wednesday, October 5th. The postseason begins 2 days later. And then there were some off days cut off in between. So my understanding, and I'm reading this straight from the MLB document, the best of 3 wild card series will be played on 3 consecutive days. No off day within the series at all. No off days between games 4 and 5 of the LDS or between games 5 and 6 of the LCS. As Jeff Passan said, quote, travel could be a nightmare should teams on opposite coasts meet.
Boo-hoo. Play every night.
You really believe that?
Yes. I hate the NBA playoffs. There's 2 days in between games sometimes.
But what about, like, it's traveling from coast to coast? Yeah. You don't think they deserve at least a day off to rest?
They're fine.
They're fine.
What do they need? They're fine. They're baseball players. They're making millions of dollars. I'm sorry. I think they should play every single night.
Take a PJ, get some sleep.
You know what? Whatever. It's like build metal. I mean, won't that add to the thing that they did if they're like traveling across the country or something like that? Come on. I don't mind them not having an off day. Plus, what? How long does it take to fly from one coast to the next? Like 5 hours?
The actual World Series schedule remains the same, which isn't a shock because that involves suits and broadcasters and all that. They're not going to change that.
No.
But the wild card and all of the LDS and LCS will be a little bit different.
Yes, especially because the Yankees are losing so much that they're going to be a wild card team.
Yeah, do you want to do a little? Hey,
I can do a little Yankees watch.
Today's the day for a little Yankees watch.
Yeah.
Because they lost again.
Especially after the Astros lost, too. Just distract everybody.
Yankees watch.
Damn Yankees!
2022.
Oh, this is ridiculous! It's like living in New York in the 1980s where you go outside, you might get shot in the head. I want to shoot the Yankees in the head right now. I'm just saying, I know a guy. Old Ralphie, who works at Satrielli's. Want me to give him a call? Hey, Aaron Judge, what are you doing? You're not doing enough. That's for damn sure. Look at this. Stephen A. Smith's on my TV yelling at me. I didn't do none of this. It's those Yankees. It's my Bombers.
Back from vacation. Forget about it.
5-series losing streak. They haven't done that since 2005. Oh, what's going on here? I thought we were historic. Clearly, we're history at this point.
And that has been Yankees Watch.
Yankees lose again. What's up with them?
What is happening? What's going on?
No, seriously. I mean, what is up? They are stale.
They are exactly who they've been all of these years. They are the same soft team. And I know some people don't like that term being used, but I just find them mentally weak. I've seen this over and over again. I mean, who has been the biggest disappointment of all the superpowers in baseball over the last 5 years?
Aaron Boone tried to make it sound like they were swinging for the fences too much. Like, he thinks that they're trying to hit too many homers.
Oh, wow. Trying to smash too many dingers.
Expensive, you know, is that an excuse or what?
Whatever it is, I mean, they were at one point, before they played any tough teams, which I highlighted, they were historically out and way in front of everybody. And in a year where, I mean, the Red Sox aren't even playing well, they're in a very tough division in the AL East. And it seems like now that they're playing real teams, now that they're playing good teams, they just don't have that medal that they claim to have.
Eric, one of our dear callers, would like to talk about the Astros. Eric, what's up, man?
Yo.
Hey, guys. I'm getting tired of Stephen A. Smith and Christopher Mad Dog Russo stole dogging the Astros, even still saying that they cheated, even though the Yankees cheated more, and right. So did the Dodgers.
Well, I get what you're saying.
I mean,
Eric.
I know they're doing it for the show.
Yeah, it's theater.
Well, here's the thing.
Appreciate the call, Eric, by the way.
Most people that are in those talking head positions don't know anything about baseball because they don't care. Like, Stephen A. Smith doesn't care about baseball. He just knows that people get mad about the Astros.
It is literally theater.
It's just gasoline.
They are making millions of dollars to put on something that elicits emotion and reaction. It's why sometimes you see Skip Bayless put out a tweet that you know he doesn't mean. Like, you know he literally doesn't mean what he's saying. But guess what? It works. People take it hook, line, and sinker. They quote tweet it.
They just get mad at
it. It becomes a subject on talking head shows. I mean, it works.
Yeah, I was going to say, you see him go after Bronny Jr., but
correct.
Then we're just giving him power. Don't talk about him. You
right.
Talk about him, you give him power.
Correct. And then people are like, how could he talk about a child like this? It's like you're giving him exactly what he wanted.
Right.
It's all about engagement.
20 years of hating coming up.
Right. It's all about engagement and likes, as Paul knows, and frustrates. That's what you need to be. Be hot take guy.
I mean, it's been working on TikTok. Ooh. I mean, I'm giving away my personal information. That's for damn sure. But all of a sudden, listen, there's a TikTok presence for your boy all of a sudden.
Are you the biggest Astros TikTok influencer?
I'm getting up there. That's
who are we coming up
on? I don't know. I will never look at TikTok. I just post and leave. Like, that's it. Whatever. I have no idea how it works. I don't want to be on it. I don't even want to be on Instagram anymore,
to be
perfectly honest. I don't want to be on any of
these. Because the algorithm doesn't work against – it works against you.
But I'm going to be a star. It is funny to see some of these guys out there. Like, they just sell you things that you're going to get mad about, and then you get mad about it. And, you know, every now and then I do it. But I hope that people know that when I'm being, like, super caricatured, that I'm generally being sarcastic or, like, playing around where – I feel like with Mad Dog Russo, like, he wants people to believe that that is his serious opinion. And, okay.
Yeah, I think Mad Dog and Stephen A. are different in that way. I do think Mad Dog, like, means most of what he says.
Yeah.
But the other two, I don't think care.
Well, Mad Dog did an interview. I heard him talk about, like, because he just started doing First Take. And he, like, was excited. And, like, he was talking about one of his top five lists. And he was like, yeah, I just flipped 1 and 2 just because I knew it would make Stephen A. Smith upset. Like, you just was just like, yeah, I just flipped it
because
I know it's a show. Like,
ladies and gentlemen, the E in ESPN stands for entertainment.
Mm-hmm. It's like entertainment for guys. Did you ever watch the E channel back in the day?
The E?
The E channel.
Oh, hell yeah. Like, E! True Hollywood Story?
E! News?
Well, yeah.
Loved E!
With, like,
True
Mario
Hollywood
Lopez
story.
As a reporter.
Give me all the juice.
He was Entertainment Tonight.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Entertainment Tonight.
Maria Menounos.
Yeah. So. I'm sure you, knew that one was coming. All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, our NFL countdown. That's next.
This is ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. No life's coming. Real fun sports.
We're ready for some football, baby.
The countdown to the NFL season continues with Vanessa and Gallant.
Oh, we are close. 22 days until the NFL season kicks off. Our jersey consultant is one Paul Maurice Gallant. What's up?
Emmitt Smith. Running back. Dallas Cowboys. NFL's all-time leading rusher. One of my favorite players, actually, growing up. We used to have to do this thing in second grade at St. Paul's Elementary School where you had to make like essentially a portrait of someone you read a book about. And I read a book about Emmitt Smith, and aww, I made a portrait of Emmitt Smith. I'm not going to lie, it was very good. But the best part was when I convinced one of my friends that I drew Doug Flutie. I don't know why he thought a black man that I had drawn was Doug Flutie. That's neither here nor there. Emmitt Smith, you might remember more recently, though, as a broadcaster on ESPN. And look, I'll give him this. The presence was always good. But here are some lines that he tried. I think he knew what he was trying to say, but he didn't have the sayings right. For example, Eli Manning has been given the rice of passage. Instead of Eli Manning has been given the rite of passage. They can ride Adrian Peterson into the doggone playoff. This kind of inconsistency play going up against a team like New England will get you completely blowed out.
Oh.
The strengths of the Patriots team got debacled. It's basically just a lot of, you know.
He tried. And he did, I do think he knew what he wanted to say, but it doesn't always come out of the mouth correctly. Trust
exactly.
Me. I know. I could not say dominant on the Astros pregame a few weeks ago. I tried three times. It wasn't good.
Dominant? What were you thinking of? Were you thinking like dominatrix? I mean, dominant.
I hate you. I did a book report on somebody too, like on somebody. I did Michael Jackson because it had to be on someone from Indiana. Here's the problem. This was the year 2005. Ooh. So I ran this idea past my parents who were like, oh, yeah, Michael Jackson's great music. Like, people will love this book report. It was not at a great time for Michael Jackson. And
why don't you just do Larry Bird?
I got made fun of.
That's a great question.
Literally until I graduated, like, for doing this.
Is it because 25 kids all did Larry Bird?
I mean, there were a lot of. I don't remember. I think it had to be someone from Indiana. I don't know why I chose Michael Jackson. I was a very weird kid. Clearly.
But you weren't as weird as him.
I mean, yeah, exactly. So that one.
There's nothing wrong with picking Michael Jackson for a book report not
knowing
what was going
on. I agree there's nothing wrong, but when you're with fifth graders and.
You're in fifth grade, though. Like, how are you supposed to know that this weird guy who was chemically castrated by his father, allegedly, like, you knew all these things? Like, just know the music.
Yeah, exactly.
Internet was not as popular back then.
Paul, I needed you in my class. The problem is, you would have been one of the kids making fun of me. Or would you have been my friend?
Only if you'd like pooped your pants, or something. Like that's the only situation where I would have actually probably made fun of you behind your back.
I didn't have that.
There
problem.
Was someone in our grade who pooped their pants.
Oh whoa! Jill we are Spill. Hoping the Poor Texans Jill. Do not poop their pants this season. Way to air it all out there. Training camp.
Wish Jill would have aired it.
I feel bad about. Let's move on. Football.
Listen, sometimes the shark turns into something.
Yes.
A little bit deeper. Texans training camp continues.
Don't say.
Do you have any thoughts? I will say this. I heard Lovie Smith, an interview that he did with SiriusXM. He says Derek Stingley Jr. will play week one against the Colts.
Stingley had a deflected
so I'm excited to see him.
Pass today intended for Brandon Cooks. So that was nice to see. It was a little bit more difficult to see things today. Here's my one real takeaway. And look, the good news is at least he's out there on the practice field and he's working. The problem is he's not working very high up on the depth chart, if you will. Kenyon Green, the other first-round pick that you got out of Texas A&M, he's got a giant, you know, knee brace on. He's coming back from a concussion because he had the offseason knee surgery. It feels like he's way behind the eight ball. It feels like he is lower on the depth chart because of that. Can things change between now and the end of the regular season? Yes. Can things change between now and the end of training camp? Can he get up to speed? Because it's important to have an offensive lineman who knows what he's doing out there so Davis Mills doesn't get hurt. I don't know. So I'm wondering about how much Kenyon Green's going to participate in the beginning of this season just based off of what I've been seeing out of practice. He just has been off to the side a lot. Today, at the very least, he was practicing, though, so I'm wishing him the best.
Yeah, me too. Texans preseason continues. They will play the Rams.
Friday.
This Friday.
Friday. Got to get down on Friday.
Aaron Rodgers, we know that there's a lot of weird things about him, whether it's the women that he dates, the things that he smokes.
Ayahuasca.
Let's just start with the football side of things. Aaron Rodgers is not happy with his young wide receivers, and instead of taking them to the side privately, he aired it out with the media, baby. Here's Aaron.
A lot of mental errors, a lot of pre-snap penalties, so kind of been the theme of camp. Simple plays, we're messing up. So it's good to do it against another team. I like the energy from the first unit, but a lot of mental mistakes.
Aaron, what does that become a concern that it might carry over to the start of the season?
I mean, it's good we do it in practice, so... It's unfortunately some of the same guys. That's, you know, repeat mistakes are a problem. So we just got to clean those things up a little bit. The young guys, you know, they got to, especially young receivers, we got to be way more consistent. You know, a lot of drops, a lot of, you know, bad route decisions, run the wrong route. So we got to get better in that area.
That's the most I've heard him dwell on that kind of thing.
He should have unplugged when he said that some guys should have been better. I don't know that putting more pressure on these young receivers is necessarily the way to go. And I imagine that some of the... what's the right word? Because it wasn't angry. It wasn't quite passive-aggressive either. I mean, he did
tension.
End up being direct. Yeah, there's...
It seemed a little tense.
I wonder if he's... pissed off about the fact that Davante Adams asked to leave and the Packers made good on that.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think that's fair.
I would be too.
But you know what? It's his fault. He waited so long to decide, and that gave Davante Adams time to reconnect with somebody who he trains with every offseason and create a plan. So, I mean, that's...
I agree. I do think...
To me, it's on Rodgers.
It's part... You know what? You're right in that it is partly on Aaron Rodgers. But at the same time, I mean, Davante Adams signed the contract with the Packers.
True.
Well, he's going to hold out so he can go play in Vegas. Like, why can't you wait until free agency or something like that? I guess the Packers.
I guess I always forget
future.
He wasn't a free.
Right.
He wasn't a free agent. Yeah. No, that's true.
At least yet. Like, you know, like so.
But one thing that Aaron Rodgers did do right that I'm sure you liked, my friend Adriana Torres, who covers sports for WBAY in Green Bay, tweeted out a video. There is a Nicolas Cage bust in Aaron Rodgers' locker. Now
I like him now.
Yeah, he came up. He showed up as.
Cameron Poe from Con Air.
Yeah, to training camp.
Put the bunny back in the box.
And now he has the bust in his locker.
He needs to go to the next level.
How's that?
I want him to show up to Packers camp. I want him to have two gold pistols by his side. And I want him to put on a jacket. Say, I could eat a peach for days. And then say, I'm Caster Troy! I'm Caster Troy. Have you never seen Face Off?
No.
Face Off is the most ridiculous movie that's ever been made because it features not just Nick Cage at the height of his melodramatic powers. It also features John Travolta.
Really?
It's and guess what? The premise of the movie Face Off is.
Do they face off?
They swap faces.
Oh, God.
Yes.
What?
They each wear different faces. Yes.
All right, we are joined now by, I believe, do we have Kamu on the line? Awesome.
Huzzah.
All right, we have Kamu Grugier-Hill joining us from the Texans linebacker. Kamu, thanks so much for taking the time to call in.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
All right, let's just start with a couple of general questions. Obviously, you're a vet now. What does this Texans team look like this year? Obviously, you have a new head coach in Lovie Smith. Now, you're familiar with Lovie because he's been with the franchise. What has Lovie been like as a head coach?
You know, it's been an easy transition for us because, you know, we had him as a DC last year. But, I mean, he's the same old Lovie, you know, just being a very positive, very just uplifting coach. And just, I mean, he's doing a great job with just everyone. The whole vibe is different.
Yeah.
And you can tell, like, the team is really bought in.
You're a leader of this team. You got some young players now that are joining you on the field. And at least based off of what we have seen in training camp and in the preseason, two rookies – Derek Stingley Jr., Jalen Petrie, they're getting a lot of action out there. What have you made of those two?
No, both those guys are super impressive. You know, I look back to when I was a rookie, and the things I was able to do and all that kind of stuff, and just looking like, thinking like, dang, these guys really got it together, you know. It was almost like I was playing catch up as a rookie, and these guys are, you know, they're right in the mix and calling out calls and making plays. It's very encouraging to see, and I mean, just we're just happy to have them for sure.
You've played for a couple different teams now in the NFL. I believe this is your fourth team. What stands out to you about this franchise? Obviously, it's one where there's some rebuilding going on. There's been some changes. What kind of gives you hope about this Texans team?
Yeah, you know, I said this last year, and it's something that kind of just got, you know, gets me excited. It's just the bones are here. We have mostly, you know, we have the structure here. We have the core here. We just got to find a way to win now. And I think the addition that we, you know, of the people, the players, the staff that we added this year, I think it's a great start to that. So, I mean, it's very exciting.
This is going to sound like a really basic question, but I was listening to an interview another player on another team was doing, and someone just asked him the bare bones question. Why do you play football? And he gave the answer, well, I like to hit people. I like to hurt people. And I was like, damn. So I don't know if that's why you like to play football, but what is it that has you as obsessed about football as you are?
You know, I think, I mean, you know, everyone's different. Everyone's reason is going to be different for sure. I think for me, football is, for lack of a better term, you know, the high that we get on game day is nothing like we'll ever feel again. I think that's why so many players, you know, have a hard time stepping away, is because, you know, you go through life and you have so many different things that bring you high and low and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, football is one of those things that just, it's unmatched. You know, I think it's the modern day gladiators, and, you know, just being able to go out there and with your teammates make plays and have the crowd yell, the fans go crazy. I mean, it's the best sport in the world.
108 total tackles for you last season. You had arguably your best career year since entering the NFL in 2016. What worked for you last year, and why were you able to really step up and be a dominant part of this team?
I think, you know, it was a mixture of things. I think that, you know, this scheme really kind of just fits my play style a little more. And, you know, obviously Coach Lovey just giving me the opportunity and just trusting in me to just go do my thing and just letting loose, you know, within the scheme and doing all that. It just kind of, everything fell where it needs to be. But, you know, this year, I think we have a greater goal. You know, I think that was a great individual goal for me,
sure,
you know, last year. But this year, now we're trying to do this as a team collectively and elevate everyone's game.
What's the most difficult thing about being a linebacker that no one knows about?
Nothing. It's actually kind of nice, you know what I mean? Because I get to go on the field, make plays, and then off the field I can, you know, be myself.
It's kind of nice. You got huge humans trying to smash you and pancake you. That doesn't sound kind of nice. I feel like especially now you guys got these egg crates on in practice. Like, that does not seem like the exactly nicest place to be on a football field.
Yeah, I know. I mean, you know, the game's definitely changing. We're getting, linebackers are getting smaller. O-linemen are getting bigger and stronger. So, you know, the hits definitely hurt after the game a little more. But, I don't know. I love it.
Kai Magruja-Hill joining Vanessa and Galan on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Who has stood out to you in camp? I know that you can only find out so much through training camp, but you guys, you know, have had a couple of high draft picks. Is there any rookie that's really stood out to you and impressed you?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, honestly, straight up, it's just been Jalen Petrie and just his ability to come in, learn the defense, play it fast at a high level, and also, you know, just his calls and checks. You know, he hasn't really, it's not like we have a rookie back there having to, like, get him up to speed. It's, you know, it's sometimes I look back there thinking it's going to be, you know, someone else, and it's him. So to see that is very encouraging. And, and all that, but truthfully, all of them work hard, and to see all of them come out there, and I think this draft class has been one of the most impressive ones I've seen, honestly.
Yeah, how soon can you tell with a guy like Petrie? Like, at what point in training camp can you tell this guy isn't going to play like a rookie? This guy's going to play like someone that's been in the league 2-3 years.
Well, you know, I think it's just the way he holds himself, you know, and it's all of them, really. I think that all their abilities are just, you know, pick up things quickly. They're very professional about the way that they're coming in, and you know, we don't really have any like free riders right now. So yeah, I think you know, the intangibles is different with this group.
Speaking of the rookies, on the other side of the ball, Damian Pierce has certainly flashed too. Have you found yourself in any one-on-one situations where it's just you and him in the open field?
You know, not too much. We've been missing each other a little bit. But, you know, a lot of it's been practice tempo too. So I'm glad he's on our team. I know that.
Your positivity really sticks out. I mean, we're at a lot of the training camps. We talk to a lot of players. You always have a positive attitude, and you have always seemed hopeful about this Texans team, and it seems to come from a really genuine and authentic place. Why are you hopeful about this Texans team, and how do you feel like y'all are gelling heading into this 2022 season?
I think, like I said before, it's just, you know, the culture here, the bones are here, and now we need to you know, string everything together and just start playing winning football. You know, I think we have everything we need, you know, this year. And I mean, now we just got to stop talking about it and just do it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Last question. It is year two for Davis Mills. Obviously this is a big year for him individually. What have you seen from him as far as growth and leadership?
You know, Davis came in last year as a very shy, you know, player, and he didn't really branch out too much, you know, like normal rookie, tendencies, but, to see him come in this year, and step into the leadership role and you know, branch out more in the locker room and talk to, you know, just kind of encourage all the guys, both sides of the ball, all three phases, I think has been his biggest step. Now, I'm not in the quarterback room too much, so I don't know, you know, the X and O's, but he looks like he's been having a great camp, and I'm excited to see him ball out this year.
Absolutely. Kamu, we appreciate your time
thanks,
so
man.
Much. We know that you have a lot of long, hot practices at training camp, so thanks for taking the time. We appreciate
thanks,
it.
Thanks, man.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, more on Astros Talk, their game last night against the White Sox. That's next.
Voted, rated, ruled.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.